Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
We actually have a leg up on this whole government thing at the moment, despite all of the haplessness of the Republicans. But we have way too much infighting going on. And I mean, not just on the federal level or state level or the local level. I mean, it's just everywhere. We're just fighting ourselves all the time. The leftists, they keep it simple. They have, and I mean, despite all their insanity and stupidity and rage, they have one united goal. They want to terminate Western civilization by getting rid of the whole Judeo-Christian foundation. And in the interim, that foundation divides itself. Now, Matt Walsh at the Daily Wire, you know, right after the murder of Charlie Kirk, he tweeted, "The entire right has to band together. Enough of this infighting nonsense. We're up against demonic forces from the pit of hell. They're killing us in our churches. They tried to kill our president. They killed Charlie, one of our greatest advocates. Put the personal squabbles aside. Now's not the time. This is existential. A fight for our own existence and the existence of our country." So, the result of his call for unity was that Walsh himself has become the target of more on the right. Now, one thing he did was when he refused to cut off his detractors, which only increased their number and his resolve. So then he went, he was on the Tucker Carlson show, and he said, "People keep demanding I disavow this person or that person, and none, I'm doing that. If they're on the right and fighting the left, I'm not going to publicly condemn them. That's how we lose." It's a real simple thing. I mean, you have to go to war with what you got. I always lean on the military experience simply because within the military experience, I worked under commanders and sergeants and lieutenants and all this other stuff. Some of them I liked, some of them I didn't like, and none of that was relevant to the mission that we had at hand. Now we have a mission at hand right now. We have a mission right now. And that is to maintain the republic. And yet, despite what I would hope would be the common mission, we don't seem to have a common way of getting there. And the right answer to all of us is that there is no right answer. You are either constitutional or you are not. Now, if you're constitutional and you're doing things that are counter-constitutional, well, you can't claim that. If, on the other hand, the only difference is that, you know, you and I are both constitutional and you just don't like the way I put things, then we should find a way to unite. Now, the left has joined with the berserkers. They are, you know, they're crazed, and they're good. They want to go with that, right? But look at that. Look at what the left has done. See, even though they have the one common goal, they have a lot of other goals that within their internal ranks are just absolutely contradictive. Like the feminists, they state that they're for female empowerment, and yet they support women abusive fanatics over the most female empowering company in the Middle East. Because they hate the Judeo-Christian family tradition more, and the toxic men who head it. And that's the same suicidal empathy that extends to the likes of the Queers for Palestine and the other small mental midgets that inhabit that. And that's a madness that is deluded and prejudiced. And, you know, we don't go that way. But the real enemy in our sight, the one that wants to kill us as it did Charlie Kirk and almost Trump, the one that has totally absorbed a major political party in America, Britain, Europe, and tragically Australia, is, you know, touched by evil. This past September, in a global wave of madness, the ruling leftist party in the UK and the Anglosphere, Canada, Australia, recognized the state of Palestine. Now, that's totally counterintuitive. That is totally against their own well-being. I don't know how many times I'm going to have to say this, but the Islamic fascination with killing Jewish people, that is item number one. There are items 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way down the line. The Jewish people are closest to them. They're the most opportune target. It's not because there's something special about them. It's just they have more chances. But they will be coming for us. They'll be coming for the UK. They'll be coming for the whole of the Anglosphere. And in a lot of ways, the same thing that they say. This is the interesting part. I find this most interesting. They said that with Charlie Kirk, he probably had it coming. Right? Because he was for gun rights. And which is the same thing they say about Jewish people. They probably have it coming. Not about gun rights particularly, but you know. In Australia, they killed 16, wounded more than 40. A father and son team. And they were probably very grateful for their host country's benevolence towards Palestine. And I wonder if they didn't think that would be okay to do that since they recognize Palestine. See, we're not, you know, at its very basic core, we have evil and we have good. And if you can't figure out who the evil are, well, there's your problem. Now, the prime minister there, he said the evil that was unleashed at Bondi Beach today is beyond comprehension. No, it's very comprehensible. If you admit a million immigrants hostile to Western culture and make no effort to assimilate them, they'll cultivate their own values, which includes the rabid hatred of Jews, which are part of Western culture. See, it's not about Jews and non-Jews, it's Western culture. So in order for us to nip this in the bud here, we have to maintain control of the government. And on the Republican side, we better figure out how to work together very soon, or we're going to go down individually. And who wants to, you know, who wants to lose in the face of evil? Who wants to lose in the face of evil? President Trump has a moment in time right now where he could look at something and bust it, and he would probably save us a lot of trouble later on down the road. This is News Talk 98.9 WORD. They called Teddy Roosevelt the Trust Buster because he took on some very powerful individuals and very economic combines and maintained certain things. And so here we are in the third decade of the 21st century. Trump's out there. He's already taken on the powerful international economic interest in tariffs, right? So he has his own trust-busting moment that he could pursue if he wanted to by looking at the Netflix and Warner Brothers Discovery merger. See, that's a little more than just entertainment there. This is something that, you know, this would be him exercising his duty to protect American prosperity. And his task is more easily achievable than Roosevelt's was. Rather than raising an existing trust, he merely needs to prevent this one from being formed. Right now, just to give it a sense of scale, Netflix makes more money than all of Hollywood. Right? All of Hollywood. And this is a $72 billion mega deal that we're talking about. And it will be a daunting task to prevent Netflix from becoming net trust. And you cannot do, I mean, looking at it, it's hard to perceive that as anything but formation of a trust. In opposing the merger, Breitbart's John Nolte laid bare the economic dangers. Netflix currently boasts 301.6 million worldwide subscribers. HBO Max has 128 million worldwide subscribers. Once this merger happens, they're looking at 430 million subscribers. Even if Netflix only charges $1 a month, that would still add up to $5.2 billion in revenue per year. But the average customer probably pays closer to $12 per month, so now we're talking about something closer to $60 billion per year. And nobody's going to be able to compete with that. This is the same thing as Walmart coming into town and putting all the mom and pops out of business. Paramount tried to compete during the bidding process, but Warner Brothers said no. And Paramount's reportedly not given up and has launched a hostile takeover bid for Warner Brothers, which could make Paramount a powerful ally to those opposing the Netflix deal. Given the subscription-based business model, this could include theater owners and workers and directors and actors and others in the theatrical film industry. And Trump may also join them. He says Netflix is a great company. They've done a phenomenal job. There's a lot of market share, and we'll have to see what happens. There are said to be significant trust, antitrust issues in the state and federal levels with this. And a lot of this revolves around Warner Brothers' fiduciary duties. If, in fact, it failed to accept Paramount's higher bid and instead chose a lower one. So if Warner Brothers chose Netflix because of cultural and political alignment instead of seeking a sale that would return the best return for the shareholders, it would constitute a potential Revlon violation. And that stems from a 1985 legal case involving Revlon, and it went to the Delaware Supreme Court, which held that a company's board of directors must seek the best value in the event of a hostile takeover. So if Paramount offers a better deal and the Warner Brothers board accepts a lesser bid, the shareholders could bring immediate breach of duty lawsuits. More important than the legal issues are the cultural effects of this merger. Andrew Breitbart always warned that politics is downstream from culture. And some people disagreed with him on that one. None of them were leftists, though. The left has always gravitated to cultural institutions, such as the media and the arts. It's a great way to shape opinions and attitudes. And for the leftists who regard politics as their secular religion, they have no compunction about using art for a political purpose. And Netflix has this penchant for doing exactly that. Like their multi-million dollar, multi-year production deal with the Obamas. Now, if the merger goes through with Warner Brothers, Netflix will continue, both subtly and not so subtly, to inundate their even more massive audience and with leftist narratives and continue their wokeness as they try to indoctrinate the American people, but it will not end there. This would also ensure that differing dissenting narratives would be silenced. Indeed, much of it will be done through self-censorship because you don't want to run afoul of the Netflix Entertainment Net Trust. Adam Carolla said how Hollywood really works. He said, actors are vying for a job that they don't have. You have to be popular. You're not going to get a job. They'll throw you out. They don't need you. They don't need anybody in Hollywood. So in order for them to work, these entertainment professionals will have to play ball. And this is Hollywood's version of the Golden Rule. And those who own the gold make the narratives, and they will brook no dissent. And if it becomes Net Trust, Netflix won't need sympathetic federal regulators or a pliable Congress or a friendly president. They would have an undreamt level of power. The robber barons would have blushed over this. These will be the titans of Tinseltown. They'll have a worldwide reach and the ability to shoehorn people into a leftist narrative. No alternative views and voices. And despite the left's disdain for the God-given right to speech enshrined in the First Amendment, they'll be more than happy to invoke it as a shield for their efforts, as is their right when government questions their own speech and practices. And time is running out because we should be protecting American liberty and prosperity by blocking this. So, if Trump can seize this trust-busting moment by stopping Netflix from transmogrifying into the entertainment industry Net Trust, this will actually be helpful with the whole concept of MAGA. It'd be very hard to make America great again if the Republic drowns in an endless deluge of cultural sewage. Missed him yesterday, but coming up next, we're going to talk about what's happened with Dan Bongino, and we're going to do that with Michael Letts from InvestUSA.org. This is News Talk 98.9 WORD.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Joining us now from InvestUSA.org is Michael Letts. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Bill. It's always a privilege. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. Now, I remember when Dan Bongino got tapped to be the assistant director of the FBI. Now, I don't remember, was all that fanfare because it was him? Because normally we don't hear about the assistant director of the FBI.
Yes, you're exactly right. The fanfare was because it was him. And let's put a preface in here. You know, he had talked about the platforms that the president wanted to hear. Corruption. It was time to clean house. It's time to indict people that have done nefarious activities. And he was saying exactly what needed to be said.
Right. And now he's decided to step down in less than a year. I mean, did you anticipate this when you saw it when all of this was going down?
I didn't anticipate when we got him. I knew that he was heading that direction. You know, I know Dan. We talked quite a few times. And Dan is the kind, he's a pit bull. And I'm not saying anything wrong with a pit bull, which, you know, politics, I think you learn, Bill, over time. Politics can sometimes be a game of patience. You're not going to get everything you want. You're not going to get it all done by 5 o'clock this afternoon. Dan's somewhat of a position that he sees wrongdoing. He expects indictments before the end of the day and
right.
Trials by the end of tomorrow. And when he began to see, it wasn't just a matter of, well, I can only type so fast, but I'll get to it. it was much deeper. It was a lot of people kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm with you, knowing good and well that they weren't, and they were deliberately trying to delay, slow things down. And he couldn't seem to get around them because, hey, you remember, there's tenure in government positions. And when you're tenured and you've been there a while, it's kind of hard to get rid of you. And you control the flow. You control the shots. Even though you are working under your boss, you still control what your boss does.
Right.
And Dan had just two aspects. You know, he did not have his family with him. He was sacrificing a lot because he was concerned for their safety in the D.C. area. He was sacrificing a lot from his family. He felt like he wasn't getting action done the way he'd like to see it done as fast. And I think probably a lot of us agree with that. But instead of trying to continue to make progress down the field, he felt like if he couldn't do that long-range pass at one time and get it done, he would move on to something else, which is what he is doing. Now, let me also very quickly say he has left the door open in my last discussion with him because this is not till the middle of January that we expect him to depart. And, of course, I have made mention, I think even on your show, Bill, that buckle up. There may be some big things happening the first part of January,
yep.
Which if it comes about, which I am just checked before I got on the show, we are definitely, looks like we're on target to make that. That will change the dynamics of America, period. And you probably wouldn't want to leave at that stage. You may want to stay and ride this thing on out.
Right. Now, let's say he does leave, right? Let's say he splits mm-hmm. and he gets, I guess there's some expectation he's going to resume his radio show.
That is what his intent is.
Yeah. So at that point, are there going to be certain things he just won't be able to talk about, or is that going to be flung wide open for him? Is he going to be able to just spill it?
There will be some things that will be classified that he will not be able to disclose.
That's what I would have thought.
There's going to be a lot in there that he can disclose, and some of what he can't disclose, he can dance around the edges close enough to where you'll understand the lay of the land
right.
without having to specifically nail it.
So his
have
biggest
a lot of interesting things to talk about.
Yeah. So his biggest issue was that things just weren't happening fast enough.
Yeah, it's an issue that we've had on your show. You know, I mean, hey, where are the indictments?
Right.
Where are the indictments? And Dan understands that when you go across the hall, the Department of Justice, you could hear the same lines. I'm short staffed. We're working on it. And, you know, we're doing everything we can. And you buy that for the first couple of weeks. After a while, you kind of say, well, what do you mean by that? What have you done the last 2 weeks ago? Did you fill out half a page?
Yeah.
Quarter page?
Yeah.
Zero page? And he just got to the point where don't give me an excuse. I don't want to hear it anymore. And when you get to that point, well, then you know you've either got to figure out how to have more patience and work through this thing, or it's time to move on. And I think Dan feels like it's in his best interest for everybody, including his own health, to move on.
Yeah. See, you know, here's my problem with this whole idea that the government officials that Trump appoints or hires or, you know, gets confirmed or whatever, that they can't live in a secure environment. How many people within the cabinet, how many people have families living on military reservations now? Because I'd heard about that. Yeah.
Yes, a lot. And you have the other half that are leaving their families in secure locations, not necessarily military installations, but don't trust the security in the D.C. area.
Right.
Don't trust that they can get a location to move their family to that they can guarantee security with. That's sad.
Is there no provision? Is there a law stating, okay, you can't defend yourself here because of this, because even though you're in, you know, part of the administration of the most powerful government on the planet, you can't defend yourself? Or what is the deal with that? Because most of these people that are calling for all of this death, they're sort of pencil neck soy boys in the most cases. And I mean, that doesn't mean they can't do something as they roll up on you, but at the same time, why is this something we give into?
Well, you raise a great point. You should have been on the call with me earlier to, within the administration today. Here's what that call was about. You know, fear is a very powerful tool.
Sure.
The opposition used it in COVID to get us to agree to give up freedoms that we never thought we would. They're now using it with the terrorist organizations to try to make you scared to open up the door. I don't operate under fear. I think it's a bad policy to do that. And this is what I am pressing now. You know, if they want to try to make us fearful, that's just like giving a T-bone steak to a bulldog to me.
Right.
I'm willing to tear after it. And I think that we should take that position, provide whatever protection is necessary and needs to be afforded, and let's deal with it head on and let them know you're not going to intimidate our government by your little tactics of fear.
I'm not going to give away any details, but, I mean, I've seen Michael drive up. And when Michael drives up, there's no doubt in your mind when you see his car that Michael is prepared. And it's not because there's nothing on the externals of the car that tells you that Michael is prepared. But you can see some things about the car and you understand that Michael is prepared. Now, you don't roll around on a daily basis paranoid, though, do you? Because you're prepared.
No. Exactly. In fact, I'm going out looking for it. That's what scares them. Makes it even worse. That's the attitude I want us as Americans to have. This is our country.
Right.
We are citizens. And we have founded this country for 250 years on freedom. And you're not going to let a bunch of Islamic jihadists, Muslims, or anybody else come in and run us off of our homes and take over. Not without a fight, you're not. And I guarantee you there's a lot more of us than there are of them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Michael Letts and InvestUSA.org have given over 17,000 plus vests to law enforcement and their canine counterparts, and he is not going to rest till they are all in the vest. Thank you for taking the time to join me today, sir.
Thank you, Bill. God bless. God bless America, and Merry Christmas. I'm sure we'll talk before then, but Merry Christmas to everyone out there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, it is very informative to live in such close proximity to Canada, because we can see all of those failed policies that the left's trying to do here. This is News Talk 98.9 WORD.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Canada has had a long-standing consensus on immigration, and that has crumbled under the weight of a massive influx from 2022 to 2024. And in that time, they took in proportionally more and experienced double the population growth of any G7 country, which resulted in a squeeze on hospitals and schools and labor markets and above all housing. And it finally saw the issue register with the broader public. When they're designing roads, right, when they're designing housing developments, they're looking at either what's already there or what is coming. And then when you take and you have something that becomes a stabilized community, when you suddenly drop 20,000 people in the middle of it, that's going to make a dent. Now, the deeper problem is that Canada's immigration model, like that of the United States, has embodied this extreme open society ideal of the late 20th century leftists. And this is all to make allowances for collapsing fertility and family formation, and it relies on a revolving underclass of temporary workers and international students to prop up the boutique business interests and floundering universities, and pushes housing policy towards dense, transient, rent-driven forms and the unattached single lifestyle. And all of that takes away from the rooted, stable community and the productive jobs that make family life possible in both the U.S. and Canada. Now, Canada has the worst housing affordability in the OECD and one of the highest levels of immigration among Western liberal democracies. Right now, the recent surge, the proportion of immigrants in the Canadian population rose in the past 30 years from 15% to 25%. And they project this level will climb further to between 30 and 40% the next decade, particularly in the context of low domestic fertility rates. And critics insist that the link between immigration and housing affordability is all correlation without causation. They also have regulatory glut. They have a low price-to-income ratio and an economy suffering from low productivity. But, you know, native-born in Canada, that dropped from 3.2% increase to 0.09%. What's more, they estimate 3.5% rent growth for purpose-built rentals over the past 2 years, which would have been 5.5% had the previous high immigration trajectory remained in place. That's in Ottawa. Ottawa is trying to do something about it. The migration pressures differ from those here in the United States, where the challenge is a large illegal immigrant population. But same effect on housing. Canada is very permissive and welcoming. They incentivize visa overstays on study and work permits, as well as asylum claims filed long after entry. And the Ottawa New Border Act acknowledges the problem, and they introduced a 14-day asylum window. They established broader powers to cancel applications in alignment with the U.S. Now, when somebody comes into your country and they're trying to become a permanent resident, this increases demand for homes. Non-permanent residents barely show up on the home ownership market, but they have very high use of rentals. And that's what you expect from a system built around temporary work permits and study visas. But it still is a strain on housing. When temporary residents drive population growth, the average new build that they make for them to accommodate them is a 400-square-foot unit. And you're not solving the fertility and family formation crisis by building a bunch of those. In fact, you're perpetuating a vicious cycle. Reduced immigration would make housing more affordable by easing the short-term pressure on rental and ownership demand. In the United States, we know, for example, that immigrants make up 25.5% of the construction workforce, and roughly 1 in 3 is foreign-born. And the housing affordability issue is also exacerbated to varying degrees by the presence of temporary, undocumented, and permanent immigrants. But all of this, if we were to assert control over migration, that would make housing more affordable for American families. So we're going to have to do something along these lines. We're going to have to think about reining in these open societies that we've tried to have. And we need to look to Canada. Because this is what we're doing, both countries, here and there. This is sort of a Ponzi scheme. We need to make it easier, not harder, for ordinary people to form a family and build stable communities, put down roots in homes that truly are their own. We need to make that easier. And the way to make it easier is to stop putting pressure on the supply. Otherwise, we're going to go the way of Europe. We're going to go the way of Europe. Because fertility and family formation is that's a part of what makes any society maintain itself. So we need to continue to watch what happens. We need to continue to push for these kind of things to happen here. Now, for the modern Democrat, fraud is a part of the resume. This is News Talk, 98.9 WORD.